All right, so Psalm 48, start with our summary for the psalm. Psalm 48 praises the beauty and strength of Zion when God's king reigns there. So I'll go over that one more time. Psalm 48 praises the beauty and strength of Zion when God's king reigns there. Outline for this psalm in two parts, verses 1 to 8, the enemies see Zion. Verses 9 to 14, the faithful see Zion. I'll go over that outline again. Verses 1 to 8, the enemies see Zion. Verses 9 to 14, the faithful see Zion. All right, so we'll go to our observations for Psalm 48. This psalm was written for the sons of Korah, as stated in the superscription, a song and psalm for the sons of Korah. It is noted as a song and a psalm, indicating a lyrical composition to be sung with instrumental accompaniment. Some of the Jewish writings that speak of this time, such as the Mishnah, note that this was one of the psalms that was sung weekly. A different psalm was sung each day in the temple. This song, I believe one reference I saw said that it was on Mondays that this song was sung in the temple, and that was actually done during the Second Temple era up until the temple was destroyed in 70 AD, meaning that even when Jesus Christ was on the earth and during his ministry, this psalm would have been one of those ones sung each week in the temple. The psalm does have one Selah that occurs at the end of verse number 8. There's no occasion that's given for this psalm, and there's no historic occasion that completely fits the psalm. So it's much like Psalm 46 and Psalm 47 before it. It's a prophetic psalm that's looking forward to the king in Zion or to Jerusalem. Psalm 48 is a corporate praise psalm, and we can see that with the use of we and us and our going throughout the psalm. The psalm does open with direct praise, and it includes some calls to praise toward the end of the psalm. The psalm has prayer elements in it. There's a brief section in verses 9 to 11 where you have direct address to God. The rest of the time, the references to God are made about God or about the city of God. This is also what we would call a kingly psalm, a royal psalm, as it speaks of the king, of the great king, and of his city. This is also, as we noted just a moment ago, a prophetic psalm. It is looking forward to the glory of Zion when the Messiah sits enthroned there. So Psalm 48 is the seventh psalm in the Korahite psalm group. In fact, there's one more to go, the next one. And so that means that it is obviously connected to Psalms 42 to 47 that come before it, and especially Psalms 46 and 47, as they are more particularly about Zion, just like this psalm is. In fact, Psalms 46 to 48 sometimes are referred to as the Songs of Zion or the Psalms of Zion. So you have connections there, like reference to the city of God here in verses 1 and 8 and in Psalm 46 in verse number 4. You have references to the Lord of hosts here in verse 8 and in Psalm 46 verses 7 and 11. God spoken of as a refuge or as a fortress in verse number 3 and in Psalm 46 verses 7 and 11. You also have mention of kings of the earth being conquered. We see that here in verses 4 to 7, as well as in Psalm 47 and verse number 9. Now, obviously, being a prophetic psalm of the coming kingdom and the Messiah, it's obviously a messianic psalm, and it's going to have connections with other messianic type psalms like Psalm 2, Psalm 8, Psalm 9, Psalm 22, Psalm 24, and so on. So this psalm also has connections with the Exodus and the Red Sea event back in Exodus 14 and 15. Some of those connections are the fear of the enemies. In other words, various terms that are used to describe the fear of the enemies in verses 5 and 6 here, as well as in Exodus 15, verses 14 and 15. We have the east wind that is an instrument of judgment and deliverance. So in verse 7 here in this psalm, it also occurs in Exodus 14 and verse 21. We also have dwelling in God's mountain forever. You know, the leading out of Israel is to lead them to his mountain as an everlasting possession, looking forward to that time. That's in verses 8 and 14 here, as well as in Exodus 15, verses 17 to 18. So the psalm also, being a prophetic psalm, bears a number of connections with the prophets. Just one of those particularly would be references relevant to the day of the Lord as described in Isaiah chapter 2, verses 6 to 21. You'll notice a number of connections between that description and what we see in this psalm. Psalm 48's poetic features. One of the outstanding features, obviously, would just be the geocentricity of the psalm. In other words, geo, just referring to earth. It's a very earthbound psalm. It's a psalm that shows in several ways the earth as the locative center of concern for the psalm. So just some examples. You have references to the city and to the holy mountain in verse number 1. You have references to situation. The Hebrew word means elevation. Earth, the north, and city in verse 2. We have reference to east wind and to Tarshish in verse 7. Reference again to the city in verse 8, to the temple in verse 9, to the ends of the earth in verse number 10, and to Zion or to Mount Zion in verses 2, 11, and 12. So, in other words, you have all of these earthbound references that are made. Another poetic feature would be the contrasts that are used. So you get a contrasting view of Jerusalem or Zion. You get the enemy's view in part of the psalm, and then you get the pilgrim's view in another part of the psalm. It does use some imagery, particularly in reference to judgment, the east wind breaking up the ships on the sea. You also have the pain of judgment coming that is used with the imagery of a woman in labor for childbirth. Poetically, you also have movement in this psalm. So you in verses 1 to 3, it's like a vision of Zion or Jerusalem from afar. And then when you get down to verses 12 to 13, they're walking through Zion. So it's seeing it up close and giving a report from up close. So we do have movement from the beginning to the end of the psalm in that regard, as Jerusalem comes more into focus by the end of the psalm. All right, so we want to walk through this psalm. It has 14 verses, and I'll go ahead and read those. Great is the Lord, and greatly to be praised in the city of our God, in the mountain of his holiness. Beautiful for situation, the joy of the whole earth is Mount Zion. On the sides of the north, the city of the great king. God is known in her palaces for a refuge. For lo, the kings were assembled, they passed by together, they saw it, and so they marveled. They were troubled and hasted away. Fear took hold upon them there, and pain as of a woman in travail. Thou breakest the ships of Tarshish with an east wind. As we have heard, so have we seen in the city of the Lord of hosts, in the city of our God. God will establish it forever. Selah. We have thought of thy loving kindness, O God, in the midst of thy temple. According to thy name, O God, so is thy praise unto the ends of the earth. Thy right hand is full of righteousness. Let Mount Zion rejoice. Let the daughters of Judah be glad because of thy judgments. Walk about Zion and go round about her. Tell the towers thereof. You may tell it to the generation following. For this God is our God forever and ever. He will be our guide even unto death. Verses 1 to 3 open up the psalm with praise for God and for His city. And you'll notice actually there's a sort of an alternation as you go throughout the psalm, praise being directed to God and praise being directed, you know, to the city or about the city. Great here refers to magnitude and to extent, and greatly refers to abundance and even force, and essentially saying that God is great and His praise should be great. City of our God, we saw that reference in Psalm 46 in verse number 4. The city of our God and mountain refer to Jerusalem. The mountain or Mount Zion refers to the Temple Mount in Jerusalem. It particularly refers to Mount Moriah in Jerusalem. This mountain is the location that is significant for both Abraham and for David. Obviously, it is the place in Genesis 22:14 where Abraham took Isaac up on the mountain to offer him as a sacrifice and ended up offering the ram in his place. It was also the threshing floor of Arwana in 1 Chronicles chapter 21 and verse number 18. David purchased that spot and he built an altar there to make a sacrifice to the Lord. Later in 2 Chronicles chapter 3 and verse number 1, it is the site where Solomon built the temple. So this is the place that is being referred to, Mount Zion or the Temple Mount in Jerusalem. And it was the place that was anticipated where God would forever place His name back in Deuteronomy chapter 12, verses 5 to 11. Now, the word for situation is a word that means height or elevation. It's referring to its high setting. It would be an exaggeration to speak of Mount Moriah as great in height or as higher in other mountains in Jerusalem. But elevation here doesn't totally relate to the physical description, but also to the exalted status of God's mountain. That is something that comes out later in the Psalms, for instance, such as in Psalm 68 and verse 16, though it also comes out in the prophets pertaining to Mount Zion. So its exalted status is seen as in terms of joy that is flowing to all of the earth from this mountain. And here it is named Mount Zion, and it refers to being on the sides of the north or to the far north. This word likely refers to a mountain location on the northern border between Israel and Syria. And it could have been the place viewed as the dwelling place of the supreme god of the Canaanites. That would be the god of Baal, or maybe some other names that he went by. So essentially, this reference is asserting the God of Israel's supremacy above all gods. And so we'll also get his supremacy above all kings in this psalm, as well as they they're in fear and fleeting as he conquers them. Not only is the city of God mentioned in this psalm, but also the city of the great king, something we've seen back in Psalm 47 and verse number 2, referring to the great king. So in other words, this is the city of God, but it is also the city of the great king, referring obviously to God's anointed king from Psalm 2 and verse number 6. This is the Messiah, the son of David, the one who will sit on this throne on the holy hill of Zion. We see palaces that is repeated twice in this psalm, in verse 3 as well as in verse 13. This word for palace refers to a high place of defense like a castle or a citadel. And refuge in this verse 3 as well refers to an elevated place of defense or safety. It's translated high tower in Psalm 18 and verse number 2. Refers to the defense that God affords to those in covenant with Him. Verses 4 to 7 then is where we see the enemies that are gathered together around Zion, and those enemies are vanquished. So the kings of the earth are assembled together around to come against Jerusalem, to come against Zion. similar to what we saw in Psalm 2, verses 2 and 10, those rebel kings raging against the Lord and against his anointed king. But it is the site of Zion that we see in this part of the psalm. It's the site of Zion with the great king's presence that has overcome them. So they are described in terms of panic and terror and fleeing away. And their trembling is then depicted as the pain of a woman about to give birth. And it is obviously, it is a mocking of the enemies to be spoken of in these terms. And then we see the east wind. It was the east wind that drove back the sea, the Red Sea, in Exodus 14, 21. And here it is the east wind that breaks to pieces or shatters the trading ships on the sea into various pieces. Verse 8 gives us a statement of the invincibility of Zion. This is a reflection after that the kings of the earth have been confounded and discomfited before Zion. And there's a reference here in verse 8 to as we have heard and then as we have seen. So there's a witness that has been given to the truth of the testimony that has been received. In other words, Zion is every bit as great as advertised. In other words, viewing this future Zion, it is every bit that has been hoped for by the prophecies that have gone before. And furthermore, it's a statement that Zion has overcome her enemies and will be established and will be an invincible forever. It will be an everlasting reign. Then we come to verses 9 to 11 in this psalm. And these are the verses that are directly addressed to God. So they are more in the form of a prayer or at least expressions of commitment to praise God. Loving kindness there in verse number 9 is the Hebrew hesed. It's the word for God's unfailing love. It is often associated with God's covenant, his faithfulness and his love, his mercy through his covenant by his promise. We have seen that in numerous places, Psalm 5, 7, Psalm 6, 4, Psalm 13, 5, Psalm 17, 7, 18, 50, 21, 7, 23, 6, 25, 6, 7, and 10, 26, 3, and just on and on. We've seen it a number of times as we've gone through. The temple or the palace that is referred to, the temple is the palace of the great king. And we've seen this used in reference to the king in Psalm 11 and verse number 4. And we also saw it more recently in Psalm 45, verses 8 and 15. God's name here in verse number 10 refers to his reputation, his fame. And what we have expressed in this verse is that God has lived up to his fame. He has lived up to his reputation. His works have complemented his fame. We see reference to his right hand, his hand of strength that we have seen in other psalms like Psalm 16:8 and verse 11 there as well, Psalm 17:7, Psalm 18:35. We've seen it in Psalm 44:3 as well, Psalm 45:4-9. And his right hand, this hand of strength, is full of righteousness, or is full of acts of righteousness, acts of justice, you know, works that are good. And then we have reference to Mount Zion in verse number 11. Mount Zion is here put for the whole city. Mount Zion rejoice, let the daughters of Judah be glad. So it is a reference that can be found in the Bible that you have a prominent city, and that would be referred to as the mother, and then you have these outlying smaller towns that are in some ways that have, you know, developed or come from this city or dependent upon that city, and they're referred to as the daughters. So here, Zion is obviously the mother, and the daughters are the towns of Judah. This is the first mention of Judah in the collected Psalms as we have them. And Judah obviously is a reference to the tribe of Judah, or more particularly to the land possession of the tribe, which included Jerusalem. So this would take in all of Judah. The reference to Judah obviously is because Judah was the tribe of David. And Judah is the tribe of the Messiah king, according to Jacob's prophecy in Genesis chapter 49, verses 9 to 12. God's judgments that are referred to here are his verdicts. It stands for his execution of his verdicts. In other words, his judgment on his enemies is just. His judgment on his enemies is righteous, and they are being praised. And then we get the end of the ending of the psalm, verses 12 to 14, which is in some way echoes the opening part of the psalm. And these verses capture the victorious image, and they capture it in order to transmit it to future generations. So these verses then begin to describe features of Zion and architectural type features, towers and bulwarks, and uses the imagery of military fortification in this part of the psalm, but also uses accounting terms, the word for tell there, tell the towers thereof, and then tell it in verse 13. And those are actually different words in Hebrew, though they are very closely related. And it would be like saying count and recount. So count the towers of Jerusalem and then recount them to the generations to come. And then we see the psalm ending in verse 14 with everlasting safety with God. This God is our God forever and ever. This one who has done this, this one who has delivered Zion, this one who has brought judgment on the enemies through the person of his anointed son king come to Zion. This is our God forever. In other words, Zion is invincible. Zion can never be defeated. Because God has set his king in the holy hill of Zion. And then he says that he will be our guide even unto death. Now, that word for death is translated unto death. Unto death means really over death, as in victory over death. And the death here would include certain destruction from enemies, and it would include victory over the grave in general, in reference to resurrection. All right, so let's go to interpretation. What does Psalm 48 mean? Well, though there are a number of maybe lesser theological teachings in Psalm 48, Psalm 48 is a prophetic psalm. And so Psalm 48 prophesies of the time when Israel's enemies are defeated and Zion is occupied by the great king to come, which is the Messiah, and so therefore the messianic hope of this psalm. So if we just look at several references in this psalm, and we will see those echoed in the prophets as describing this time of the coming that we refer to as the second coming of the Lord Jesus Christ. So verses 1 to 3 look forward to the beauty and the station of that city in that day. All right, so this is the time that Isaiah saw in the last days. In Isaiah 2:2, he wrote, "And it shall come to pass in the last days that the mountain of the Lord's house shall be established in the top of the mountains and shall be exalted above the hills, and all nations shall flow unto it." Now, obviously, there's some overlap there with Psalm 47 as well. But notice what Isaiah says about Zion. He refers to it as the mountain of the Lord's house. And we have this reference to the temple, to the palace, to the Lord's house in Zion on the mountain of his holy hills. Not only will it be established there, but Isaiah said it will be exalted above the hills. Beautiful for situation, verse number 3 says, for elevation, for height, for its exaltation above all of the mountains. And that actually is an imagery that is used in different places in the prophets. For instance, like in Daniel, Daniel saw the stone that was cut out of the mountain without hands. It comes down and smashes all of the kingdoms of the earth, and then that stone becomes a great mountain, the greatest mountain that ends up covering all of the earth and so on. So that's very common imagery to speak of Christ's kingdom here, particularly Mount Zion, which is the capital seat of Christ's kingdom. In verse 4, the kings of the earth are assembled against Jerusalem, and we see reference to that obviously in Psalm 2, verses 1 to 3, but we also see that prophesied about in places like Zechariah chapter 14 in verse number 2, the kings of the earth are gathered together against Jerusalem. In verses, excuse me. So in verses 5 to 7, we have the flight and the defeat of the kings of the earth and their respective nations. And there's where he particularly uses imagery from the Exodus. And what is interesting is that this psalm goes back into the Pentateuch, back into Israel's history, to get hold of imagery that actually looks forward to past, even when the psalmist was writing this psalm, to that far future time, last days, Isaiah referred to. It's going to be the culmination of the day of the Lord, as referred to in a number of prophecies. So he uses that imagery from Exodus chapter 15 and verses 14 to 15 in particular. And he even makes reference to this time, a time causing such trembling that it is like those labor pains before birth. And that's actually a very common imagery of the tribulation that is coming on the world. So here are some places where that imagery is used to describe this time. Isaiah chapter 13, verses 6 to 8. Chapter 26, verses 17 to 18. Jeremiah chapter 30, verses 5 to 7. Hosea chapter 13, verses 12 to 13. Micah chapter 4, verses 9 to 11. And chapter 5, verses 2 to 3. And in the New Testament, in Matthew 24, chapter 24 and verse number 8. And in 1 Thessalonians chapter 5 and verse number 3. There was a common prophetic imagery of that time of tribulation judgment. And also, when you look at this psalm and the defeat of the enemies and such, we see that it fits, this psalm fits very well in the general description of the day of the Lord in Isaiah chapter 2, verses 6 to 21. And then we get to verse number 11 in this psalm that speaks of Zion being gladdened or cheered up. And that's what the word, let Mount Zion rejoice. And the word means gladdened or cheered up. And actually, this corresponds to the prophesied banishment of sorrow and the wiping away of tears at this time when Jerusalem is restored, when Zion is established, and when the king has come. So we have references like Isaiah 25:8 and Isaiah 30:19, Isaiah 35:10, and Isaiah 60:20. All these times that speak about the coming of the king to Zion, the restoration there of Jerusalem, the wiping away of tears, the rejoicing that comes because the king has come. And in verse 14, the psalm ends with God leading to victory over death. And this is also prophesied, not just in New Testament passages about resurrection, but it's also prophesied in such passages as Isaiah 25:8 and Hosea 13:14. That resurrection is promised to those who believe, and they will gain victory over death. And Paul referred to that in Acts chapter 26, verses 6 to 8. Paul referred to that resurrection as the hope of Israel. And this hope is the hope that comes through the death and the resurrection of the Messiah. And that is plain in previous Psalm 16, verses 10 to 11, and Psalm 22 and verse 22. All right, so let's go on to our application for this psalm. We have two primary applications. In other words, as you read the psalm itself, there's an intended effect. There's actually a command and an effect that is to be had by this psalm. So, number one, understanding Psalm 48 should help to cheer us up, should help to make us glad, even in this day. That was an obvious intended effect for this psalm, as you can tell by reading through the text of the psalm. And so by faith, we look forward to the coming and the victory of the great King. And one of the effects that that should have on us is to gladden us, that it should cheer us up, that it should give us reason for rejoicing. It should lighten our hope with a light, a strong, burning light. Number two, understanding Psalm 48 helps us understand the necessity to continue to teach these promises to those coming after us. We see that sort of that wisdom element almost in this psalm of handing these things on to the generation to follow, and that generation in turn will hand it to the generation to follow, and that generation will hand it, and so on and so on until we get to the point of the Lord's coming. And so that way there's a remembrance that is maintained of the Lord's future coming. So again, we should be gladdened by Psalm 48. We should be cheered up by what Psalm 48 is telling us. And also, we are reminded that we need to also pass this on to those who are coming up after us. We need to hand this to others as well.